Good day, nerds, and welcome to another Cantina Conversation with our book reviewer, Megan, and a returning author, Margaret Owen. Margaret is returning to the show this time to discuss her new book, Little Thieves. Megan and Margaret dive into this retelling of an old Brothers Grimm tale and keep it spoiler-free. Without any further ado, here is Megan and Margaret.
We've got Margaret Owen joining us today. We're talking about Little Thieves. Margaret is a returning guest. She talked to us, I think it was last year when you released The Faithless Hawk. That was the sequel in your duology for The Merciful mm-hmm. Crow. So welcome back. And thank you for taking time again today to talk with us about your Little Thieves that comes out.
We actually had a little bit of a delay. It went from October 5th to October 19th. So the 19th is the official release date.
Very exciting. You're on the last leg here of your, you know, your press and all that good stuff. Okay, so before we get started, how about you give us like a little summary of what your book is about, just to kind of familiarize people who might not be, you know, up to date on what the story is about.
Sure. So if you are familiar with fairy tales in general, but generally more of the, you know, the Grimm's Brothers fairy tales, you probably have come across one that's called The Goose Girl. And it's, you know, pretty run of the mill. The princess is sent to live in the kingdom of her fiance. While she's traveling over there, her maid quits on her and then forces her to trade places. And the maid becomes or takes on the role of the princess, and the princess has to work as a servant in the castle that she was supposed to become the queen of, which was awkward. And she takes on the role of the goose girl. And through various fairy tale shenanigans, you know, the truth comes out, the princess is restored, and the maid is scammed into naming her own punishment, which is horrible. Yeah. And I've always thought that was an interesting fairy tale, but Little Thieves is the story of the maid, the evil maid who scammed her way into the role of the princess. And I wanted to tell the story from her perspective. So Little Thieves is the story of this girl named Vanya, who has been living for a year as the princess that she used to serve. Mm. And she has also been using her high society access to gain entry to a whole lot of parties and a whole lot of jewelry, which she helps herself to. And then the story opens with her mistakenly robbing the wrong folks, enraging their guardian deity. And the guardian deity thus curses Vanya to turn into jewels herself over the course of the next or 2 weeks, basically from the new moon to the full moon. And the only way to break the curse is to make up for everything that she's taken, including the identity of the princess that she's stolen. And sort of complicating the picture are the fact that the princess's fiance is on his way back and he wants a wedding ASAP. Yeah. And Vanya does not want to marry him. And also the fiance, trying to butter up the nobility, has hired an extremely skilled detective to chase down the thief who's been robbing all the nobility.
Yeah.
So that's Little Thieves in a slightly wordy nutshell.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was pretty fun. Oh, yeah. I really do like Vanya as a character. She, you know, she was like, I don't know, sarcastic, but, you know, she's out for herself. But, you kind of understand why she's kind of justified in some of her actions. Yeah, I was just like, you know, she's kind of a smart ass too. And she, you know, some of the decisions she makes and some of the quips and her responses to some things, I couldn't help but laugh at, because, you know, she had her eye on the prize. And then when things don't work out, or when she's like approached with the situation that she's like, doesn't know what to do, it's very funny to kind of see her figure it out, like to see her like, how is she gonna like work her way out of it? And I'm here thinking like, well, how is she gonna get out of it? You know, like, you know, and all of them are, all of your characters, once again, because I, you know, I can't help but compare it to, you know, your Merciful Crow duology, you know, because Fi was kind of like, she was like, she had like, she was kind of soft, but also hard. Mm-hmm. Like she, you know, she kind of teetered that line a little bit, yeah. Depending on who she was with, what situation she was with. I didn't, you know, because you didn't see that much from Vanya. She was kind mm-hmm. of, she wasn't soft on a lot of people. You know, she was just trying to fool them for the right. most part. You know?
just or kind of fake scamming.
Yeah, or kind of figure out like what she has to do or say to like, yeah, to scam them or to fool them and all that. So, but yeah, like in all your characters in this story are, they're likable, but you know, they're a little bit damaged, you know, and, but that's what makes them realistic and interesting and multidimensional. You know, so I definitely appreciated that. So how did this experience releasing this book compare to that of your experiences releasing your duology?
So it's definitely been an interesting shift. I mean, so this is in even the normal times, this would be kind of weird because it would be after my first series is completed and I'm just completely flinging myself at something completely different. Mm. And I mean, as different as YA fantasies can be.
You know? Right. But,
you know, I just sort of took a big old zag away from the Merciful Crow universe. It would be challenging, I think, in any scenario, just because you have to basically sell your fan base on a completely new world.
Yeah,
and you have to attract people who were like read Merciful Crow and were just not into it. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, that's already a sort of fine line to walk, and then you throw in the biblical plagues.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's better, and we're still competing with just this absolutely garish news cycle. It's been a little bit challenging, but I think what makes it interesting, what sort of keeps me on my toes, is figuring out ways to reach people even through the fire hose of just news and distractions, and you know how to get, you know, how to be like, hey, guess what, everybody, you know, gonna clap my hands, everybody listen up, I got a book coming out and I think you're gonna like it. You know, so we've done some fun things. Like we have a comic that I did that illustrates the scene of Vanya getting cursed, and where, you know, we sent hard copies to folks and we're going to be sharing the whole thing online at some point. And that's kind of me being like, you know, I can draw and I can use any tool possible, you know, any tool I can use to sort of launch myself into, you know, into people's field of view, get myself out on the radar. I'm going to use it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I do like, I remember that, you know, seeing your artwork on your website when you were releasing Merciful Crow and the Faithless Hawk, right?
Yeah, I know.
Trying to keep track of all your titles. And
I ruined people with that one.
No, it just reminds me of, I think a comment one of your readers, I think on Goodreads, commented like, this hawk needs Jesus or something. Just like, I think that, like, I can't help but think of that every time I want to say the title. It's just like, yeah, it made me laugh.
For sure. The Jesus hawk. Right. Too far off.
Right, exactly. So yeah, but I did peek around your website again to see the illustrations that you got, and all the character illustrations that you had for the characters in this story. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really fun, like, to kind of maybe compare your vision with what maybe like I came up with in my head, like seeing your vision after the fact, like, you know, mm-hmm. I'd already finished the book, and then to kind of go back and see, you know. And I love Ragni. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that name properly?
I probably don't say it right. So I'm just saying, you know, it's, her name is also a shapeshifter. It's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, right. The appearance and the letters.
Ragna, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I loved how she was drawn. It like, it kind of brought her to life for me. Cause she was okay. Such a goofy little character. You know, she was just mm-hmm. trying to understand humans, and, you know, just some of the situations she was in her responses to some situations was great. I loved it. But yeah, I really enjoyed kind of like seeing the artwork, and your character mm-hmm. illustrations, like after you know, kind of like comparing them to my visions. And, you know, kind of, you know, Emmerich, he was pretty much the same as how I pictured him.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's, no, it's great. I love, you know, seeing the artwork of, you know, character illustrations, and I just add, you know, add something, especially if it's, you know, from the author. It definitely helps if it's like solidifies it. So yeah, like going back to like where you like kind of came up with story, like what kind of research besides maybe reading this the Goose Girl a million times, I don't know, like went in kind of like fleshing out the characters and the storyline and the little conflicts that were going to arise along, you know, the story arc.
So this is, I'm going to put on my big old nerd hat and with a slight dose of activism hat.
Sure.
That,
okay.
So this is a, it's a world that's very clearly sort of Germanic.
Oh yeah.
Right. Took a lot of influences from Bavaria in particular. And as I was doing research on, you know, the setting, you can barely get like 3 inches into a Wikipedia article where before it's like, and here's how they persecuted Jewish people throughout the ages. And so there was a lot of work that I wound up doing, which was, you know, this is good work to do, but where you say you have to go, you know, kind of do a deep dive into everything that you bring in from that setting and be like, okay, have the neo-Nazis appropriated this too? Or are we clear? So there's, you know, there's reasons why, like, you know, there's mentions of runes. I don't get too far, you know, I don't get really specific about those because turns out neo-Nazis are real into the runes.
Yeah.
And, or like different symbols, like Thor's hammer is apparently super big with some of those wings. And it's one of those things where, you know, there are a small number of people who are going to get those references, but I still don't want that to be a traumatizing experience for them.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. Cause you're also kind of, you're still already touching on some, you know,
right.
Issues like, stuff, you know, like, yeah, like exactly. More to the person. Yeah. Yeah. And plus I imagine there, it'd be like, your book would be like, like, you know, at least 10,000 more words if you were to include like that side of, you know, the country's history, the region, you know,
right,
all that.
Right. And so it was definitely sort of a two-forked thing where it was like, okay, so we're not going to use this. And this, you know, it's a loose analog of, you know, the Holy Roman Empire at that time. It being loose means that there's other stuff that I can fill those gaps in with. And then I, you know, I get to put on my, all right, what are we going to make up, you know, what's an interesting way to make up the difference here hat. And I get, you know, that lets me be sort of creative in the same way that I tried to be with The Merciful Crow, where it was like, well, this isn't going to necessarily take inspiration from one particular culture. So when it was like, all right, so we have a hole here that we need to plug, how can I come up with an interesting way to plug that hole in the world, in the culture? And yeah, so that was, you know, that was a lot of fun. And it was, you know, I was doing research on everything from, you know, different pastries to the Bavarian dialect as I was trying to figure out how to do words that were sort of German-ish, but wouldn't drive German-speaking readers through the roof.
Oh, sure.
Which I'm glad that we brought in a language expert for the final pass.
Okay, great.
So, that, you know, there's some words that are definitely going to change, like the name for the monsters is now Gremlings, just because we figured that works better. And like, instead of Greta, Vanya's maid alias is Marta. And there's other reasons for that. But
sure.
Yeah, so there's, you know, the final version has a lot of differences, like nothing huge, but like, you know, there, apart from the illustrations, there's a lot of work that, you know, went in well after the preview copies went out.
Oh, sure. No, that's good to know, because when I publish my review, I'm going to make sure I get erase Greta and then replace it with Marta. Or just say, P.S. this might be Marta.
It's I've seen plenty of reviews that use plenty of the old terminology, so it's totally fine.
yeah And you know, I was lucky enough to tag along with my husband one of his work trips years ago to Germany, Munich, and I love traveling, and so I was like, you know, I'm very little German, like, so I don't mm-hmm. have like a huge like motherland vibe to the country, but it was mm-hmm. it was like very enjoyable, and you know, I did try to learn the language, and I found it was, you know, a little it's easy
tricky. Yeah,
it can be tricky. I think it's mostly the pronunciations, because you kind of like intuitively, because it is like right. English is a Germanic language, it's kind of like you mm-hmm. you kind of recognize some terms, and some of them are derivative, and right. so, but yeah, there were some of them where I was like, no, I pronounced it Banja in my head the whole time. So hearing it Banya, I'm like, oh no, actually it makes a lot of sense. Like, but yeah, right. some of it's tricky, but I recognize like the vice versa, you know, which mm-hmm. was like, I love, and I guess it is solely a Bavarian thing. I think if you go into mm-hmm. a lot of any other place in Germany, it's not as popular mm-hmm. outside of Bavaria. So no, there, yeah, I appreciated a lot of like some of the terminology, you know, and the way Vanya was using the vice versa was very hilarious too, and thank yeah you. No, it's like, it's so funny how, you know, you kind of like, I appreciate that you went, that you tried to do it as much justice as you could by mm-hmm. staying true to the region, staying true like historically, and you know, hopefully that enthusiasts of the genre, of the era, of the region will get that much more into it, or if you, maybe they're looking a little more meticulously than you want them to. You know, you never know.
Oh yeah, no, there's definitely like the there are a couple little anachronisms where I was just like, I know that this wasn't around until like the 17th century, but you guys are just gonna have to deal. You're just gonna have to cope. Like the cravat was not around for the time period, like the least time period I was going for, and I was like, I'm sorry, it's too much of Emmerich's character to actually have one of those. It can't go. It has to stay.
Yeah, no, and it's so funny, like talking of speaking of Emmerich, mm-hmm. so he, you know, he's pretty tenacious, he's got some tricks up his sleeve, you know, was like, he came out of nowhere, he's like a little more sneaky than meets the eye, you know, because he's like essentially a detective or junior detective, you know, and so how, like, what kind of, like, did you do any special, you know, occupational research for his character, like maybe like what type of person he would be to be drawn into that role, like how did that mm-hmm. go about?
I'm gonna put my nerd and also activist hat back on. Yep. I wrote the first draft of Little Thieves, like from about December 2019 to beginning of March of 2020 was when I turned it in. You know, that was a lot of fun, but I already had some thoughts about, you know, what I would want to do with having a character who was a member of law enforcement, or, you know, serve that kind of function. And then we had some pretty major protests in, you know, spring and summer of 2020.
Yeah,
related to yeah. And I remember, you know, talking with my editor about this, and I was like, we need to make sure it's really clear that he is not a cop. Like, yeah. Like,
yeah,
he does not embody what, you know, people are protesting, and his role is not something that can be abused, frankly, you know. It's something that we didn't get into too much with this book. You know, there's mentions of, like, you know, accountability that they have to go through, and it's like a very small limited number of highly trained people mm-hmm. who are only investigating major crimes mm-hmm. rather than, you know, people who are whose job it is to literally police a community,
right?
And one of the things that I found when I was doing research on old-timey law enforcement, and this is gonna make some people mad, and I apologize in advance, kind of, but also, you know, history, a lot of law enforcement, like early law enforcement, was just organized crime. Like, that's basically what it was. And like, it was the mafia hiring people to regulate their neighborhoods.
Sure, you know? Sure, yeah. And yeah, you definitely mirrored that.
That was the whole thing, is that, you know, we wanted to make sure that there was a sort of emphasis between this organized quote unquote guard system, you know, guard force mm-hmm. that was very clearly protecting property of some people versus, you know, the role of the prefects, which is to which, you know, the junior prefect, which is to you know, go in, like actually uncover crime at even higher levels, regardless of the potential perpetrators, you know, status. They're sort of like, they operate outside that system. They can't be bought off hypothetically. And so right. You know, that was important to me to sort of emphasize that they have not just, you know, not just a lot of training, not just a lot of, or not just a lot of, you know, a lot of skills, a lot of power, but also accountability, you know?
Yeah. And then, yeah. And even like, so that accountability comes in the form of, trying to be a little spoiler free, it comes in the form of like definitely like the higher power.
right.
Like that's the gist I got, where it's kind of like, mm-hmm. no, if I'm wrong, this is it. Like this is, you know, and that's like, right, that's an exactly. interesting take on it for sure. You know, yeah, it's like, you can't just go around, you know, holding grudges and throwing comments around or making official moves.
Exactly. Or abusing your power. Yeah. And, yeah. you know, it was important to me too, that I think one of the distinguishing things with Emmerich, that, you know, without getting too much into spoilers, is that he has personally experienced the miscarriage or the misuse of authority with what happened to his family. And, you know, he's personally witnessed how law enforcement can be abused and yeah. will be abused. And I think that makes a huge amount of difference for him personally when it comes to things like, you know, investigating other law enforcement officials.
Right. He knows better, and he's not trying mm-hmm. to, you know, it's almost like it almost becomes central to his motivation, like to do his job well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I enjoyed him as a character. For sure. And it was, I don't know. I just like, I imagine that he would have been like, for Vanya, she was just like, mm-hmm. oh my God, this fool. Like she was like, like this guy, he's so annoying. I can't stand him. He's, you know, I now is another person right. I need to throw off my trail. And, mm-hmm. you know, and lo and behold, you know, he's not as smitten as, or as, you know, he doesn't jumble his yeah. words as easily as, you know. He's not as easily right. intimidated. So like kind of touching on like the gods and stuff like that. So Vanya, I guess with like, this is kind of a little bit of a loaded question. So like, mm-hmm. you know, she's got her child abandonment issues, and it's so central to who she is. It explains so much of who she is and how she's grown up and how her personality has developed and how she's had to see the world, in addition to being, you know, a child servant essentially to like the elite family, and also just having no choice. And then when she kind of does get a choice, she like avoids making it because she's like, wait, she's not gonna fall into mm-hmm. that trap, you know, as the way she sees mm-hmm. it. So like, but the people who adopt, or the gods who adopted her were Death and Fortune, which mm-hmm. is very interesting. Do you see them as like opposites, or like did you play around with different gods being her godmothers, or, you know, like how did that go when you were like fleshing out those details, or like thinking of that, the twist on you know, the retelling of the tale? Because I imagine there would have been like a million different ways you could have gone depending on which god you chose.
So there is actually a fairy tale that I took a little bit of inspiration from for Vanya's backstory, and it is called Godfather Death. Now I made it Godmother Death, but that's because it's me. But in Godfather Death, this boy is basically, he's born, he has no godparent. His father takes him out into the woods and totally find Death and says, will you be my kid's godfather? And Death is like, okay. Yeah. And the whole thing is, when the boy gets older, he develops this gift to see, or he can see Death. So he can tell, or he sort of passes himself off as a doctor, because he can see if Death is standing at someone's sick bed or not. And then he eventually gets in trouble because he sees Death at someone's foot or at, you know, at someone's bed and says that he doesn't, or basically uses his power to save someone from death. And death is not happy about that. but you know, that idea of being able to see death, or to, you know, and having death as a godparent and being able to see death at work was really interesting to me. I don't actually remember how Fortune entered the thing, other than, you know, I think, you know, the idea that Vanya is the 13th daughter of, you know, the 13th child of a 13th child.
Yeah.
I liked the idea of her having a sort of unlucky streak too, or like, you know, that kind of idea of like, you are born unlucky.
Yeah.
Partially because, you know, there's a lot of folks who feel like they were born unlucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time, maybe at some point we'll be able to engage with, like, you know, that idea of, are you born unlucky, or were you just born marginalized and poor?
Right. Like, yeah. Well, you know. Like, that word is subjective for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think the idea of meeting death and Fortune at a crossroads was just a very sort of vivid idea for me. And if I remember correctly, I don't know if I had originally planned on Vanya being able to see their hands at work, as it were. Mm. But then, like, a couple chapters in, I was like, no, actually, this is very handy as a way to sort of direct the reader's attention and build tension. So we're just going
to lean
into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so did you like play around with any, so you just like kind of stuck with death and Fortune? Cause I know like later some other gods kind of like show up. And so I was thinking like, oh, I wonder if like Time or Justice ended up being her godparents. I think they probably would have been a little bit more annoying, like from her, you know,
oh,
from
my her God, perspective the worst. Or,
yeah.
And, you know, I think it would be harder to just in like sheer hypothetical terms, it would be a lot easier to find death or Fortune in a forest, or, you know, or to go out and literally seek those two than it would be to literally find Justice or Time.
Oh, yeah. And for
part,
sure. So
this part of that is very, it's very philosophical, but also, you know, part of that is just how they function and, like, you know, what their role is in the world. Whereas if you are literally looking for death in the forest, that is not going to be a difficult thing to find.
Yeah. Or truth. I don't know. Would you just go like tell a person a lie somewhere? I don't know.
Like, truth was one of my favorites because it's this idea. At one point, my editor was like, Molly, how does this work? How does this really work? Are people compelled to tell the truth or not? Or, you know, or do they tell the truth? What happens? Because if someone is forced to tell the truth, or if truth can just say whether or not they're lying, then the whole, like, you know, you aren't going to have a whole lot of tension in the big final scene for reasons. And I was like, let's be philosophical about that, which is like, I don't want to answer it.
But right. You're like, wait, well, let's come back to that.
Right. But I liked the idea that the way that truth functions is that they can know whether or not the person believes that they're saying, you know, the truth.
Right. Like, yeah. She kind of, yeah. And that kind of came across too, where it's like, he believes he's telling the truth, or it's just like,
right.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting too. It's almost kind of like a lie detector test. Like, I've never been subject to one, but I don't know. I think I've heard somewhere along the lines of like, it's easy to, they're not that reliable, I think, because you can,
right.
People could kind of control their physiological responses and,
right.
You know, really like, no, I believe this is true. So my body's not going to respond to this statement or this answer.
Right.
Yeah. No, that was that. Yeah. I imagine that was a cool little thing to play around with.
Inadmissible in court. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what, it's kind of a two-part question. I like, or actually first before, so the cover, tell me how you came up with that, because it does remind me of your the duology covers too.
Oh man. So we went around a couple rounds on that because the first cover that was proposed was almost too much like the duology. And I was like, you guys, we can't we can't do that because it's a different world and a different story, a completely different universe. And we've gone real, we've leaned in to the fact that The Merciful Crow is a duology.
Yeah.
So if we put out a book that looks like the third book in a trilogy that we've assured people is a duology,
yeah.
then what we're going to have is angry fans of the duology who don't pick it up, or who pick it up and feel disappointed that it's not a third book in a trilogy. And we're going to scare off everybody who didn't like The Merciful Crow. So we had to go a couple of rounds with revision on that, but it was absolutely worth it. I think, you know, the end result was just absolutely fantastic. And
yeah, it's, be happier. It's really pretty. And it's kind of like, when I first saw it, I was like, you know, little thieves, plural. I'm like, oh, okay, what's going on there? Are they all like little three figures in the front? Are those the thieves? And then mm-hmm. once I got into the story, I was like, oh, okay. Like, it, right. But it was still cool to kind of like, okay, all right, well, there's fortune, there's death, and then there's the god that screws mm-hmm. her over. Like, well, she kind of, I mean, she screwed herself over, but you know, she, she's going to get caught one way or the other.
Isvald is such a troll. I love her so much.
She is. Uh-huh. I remember like when the guy was telling her, trying to be threatened, like trying to recite her curse. And she's just like, oh, wait, like, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Like trying, like interrupting her about, you know, like the uh-huh. first thing that pops up on her face. She's like, oh, wait, I could get this. Like, I just thought it was like so funny. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. So yeah, I know, right? I was like, okay, I'm digging this girl. So like, and then you that, did. Yeah. So what made you choose like first person versus the duology was told in third person, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. through Fi's point of view. Mm-hmm. So how, you know, what made you kind of like switch gears there?
So, also just as an aside, a fun story is that I actually drew the scene where Vanya is being menaced, but meanwhile, just, you know, trying to cut the ruby off of her own
yeah.
face.
Yeah.
Like, I could sell this for so much money. That was one of the first things I drew when I was sort of planning the vibes of the story to just sort of get what, you know, what kind of tone it would have. Cause I do that. I'll, you know, sketch out little moments and
sure.
and stuff. And so that I'm glad that that was able to make it into the final cut because I really enjoyed that. But, mm-hmm. I did, you know, kind of wanted to just go in a totally different direction from Merciful Crow, and that was one way to do it. But also there's a lot of moments where Vanya will kind of make offhand comments, or you know, just sort of speak directly to the reader and just be yeah. like, listen, this effing guy. And it was, you know, I think that would be harder to pull off in, you know, third person past. And while, you know, for me personally, I like to write very close third person, so there wouldn't be a huge amount of difference between the two. It does feel much more like Vanya is telling you the story, which is ultimately thematically kind of thematically relevant too, you know, because there's this whole running motif of Vanya being the one to be telling this story,
right,
of different aspects throughout the book. And while I hadn't necessarily planned on that, it was one of those happy little accidents that wound up working really, really well. And it was just, it was so much more fun to write her story in first person as it was happening than it was to try to tackle it all in third person. And it also made those interstitials where there's the story things, you know, the first tale and the second tale and so on. It helps set those apart as something that like is kind of something that she's keeping a little bit at arm's length.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause she's telling the story like almost a little detached, you know, mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, let me tell you a tale or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, oh, this happened to her. Like, even though it takes a little bit.
No. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I imagine it was more fun to do first person because then it's like she does break the fourth wall a little bit. And then she's also like, you get the like a little bit inside her head where you, you know, she is cunning and she's like tricky. And she's also, she tries to be like one or two steps ahead of everybody. And so it's more fun for the reader for sure to kind of like be in on it with her a little bit. you know, and mm-hmm. you know, rather than like, I would imagine a third person third person narration would be a little, you would almost be a little as detached as you, maybe you're the author, as you, as the author is like, right. maybe a little more detached to what's going on, or like trying to, but there are, you know, you make different choices for different reasons. And then I imagine this was like, so which one did you mm-hmm. like better? Did you like first person a little bit better, or it depends on like Ooh. The project?
I think it would depend ultimately on the project. However, I do think, even though people will be like, oh, I don't like first person, or I like third person, I feel like there's kind of almost a forced intimacy of first person
yeah.
that can be, you know, beneficial to some people, deeply off-putting to others, which is fair. But
right.
I kind of like that idea, or, you know, the feeling of writing in first person, where it's kind of like, hey, come here. Let me tell you something. You want to hear a wild story? I got one for you.
For sure. Yeah. They're both fun in different ways. And I guess it depends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like how you want to tell the story too, for sure. Cause you mm-hmm. could tell if you want to take it different perspectives, if like from different characters, or if you, how you want to tell the story, like from this point of view versus that point of view, it's mm-hmm. obviously it's easier to jump back and forth if it's not first person.
Right.
But then yeah, with first person, you're following this person, you know, this character throughout the whole time. So you're just like, you can't help but become a little bit more invested mm-hmm. in the outcome. So what was your favorite, what were your favorite parts to write And then what were the most challenging parts to write?
Oh man. Okay. So favorite parts, I always love writing an ending. And I will like, I use a tool called Pacemaker to track how much I'm writing every day. And okay. you will see consistently, anytime I'm writing the end of a book, like I'll have this cute little line chart, and then it'll just shoot through yeah. the roof all the way to the end, because I've been laying all the groundwork for it. Sure. It's like having an entire book where you're sort of like setting out ingredients for the recipe, and like you've been mixing little separate bowls, and then the end of the book is where you just sort of lay out the entire meal, and you're like, dig in, jerks, it's all yours now. And you know, so that I love writing the ending. I think my fate, like the scene that I was embarrassingly making myself laugh the most, was definitely the breakfast interrogation scene.
Oh yeah.
That was, and I was positive I wasn't going to get away with that, and then I did somehow, and I'm very happy that I did.
Yeah.
I think for hardest ones, there was definitely, you know, there are two very emotionally charged, there's many emotionally charged moments in the book, but I think the ones that were like emotionally difficult were sort of towards the middle, where Vanya drinks something that she shouldn't and has to face, you know, sort of the truth of who she is. That was right. a very, you know, sort of emotionally, like, know what you are doing is not okay to yourself. What you were doing isn't just hurting others, but also hurting yourself. Like, that's a tough thing to write. And then, without being too spoilery, there's another moment where she is not being believed for what she's saying, which is the truth. And she sort of has this moment of dissociation. And that was a very emotionally grueling scene to write, because I was just like, I feel bad for everybody. Well, not everybody, but I feel bad for a lot of people in this situation. Right. This is not easy to write.
Yeah, and even I remember that, where she even says, like, damn it, like the one time I'm actually like, this is right. true, like this is true.
Like, right. And it's still, she's out there being vulnerable, and then I was like, oh, what's this? Is this emotional growth? Let me just
right. Yeah. It's like, imagine one of those things where it's like, it's kind of, yeah, like it's challenging, but it's almost like, all right, like what can we do to her? Like, how can we go through, you know, how can we go about doing this? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So just a couple more questions before we wrap mm-hmm. up here. So what do you hope readers get out of this story?
Oh man. A good time, for one. You know, I think it was definitely the most fun I've had writing a book in a very long time. So that was a, you know, I hope that people also have a lot of fun with it. But I think, you know, there's a couple moments that I think are important for people to hear. Like the moments about, you know, taking care of yourself and being believed when you are speaking the truth. And also, I think being aware of, you know, how your actions would impact others, even in ways that you don't really think about. Like for me, one of the important moments was in one of the flashbacks, which isn't too much of a spoiler, but like we see the Princess Giselle, who has been kind of stuffed into this dress that she doesn't want to wear and this role that she doesn't want to wear. And she is basically rips the dress, getting out of it. And for her, it's sort of like this liberating moment. And for Vanya, she's like, well, I'm going to have to clean that up.
Yeah.
That, you know, I kind of want to emphasize those moments. You know, I think I want people to take away that too, where it's like, it's okay for you to not feel freed by something that frees someone else. And it's also important to remember that, you know, to bear that in mind, that what is, you know, what is gross for you cannot come at the expense of somebody else.
Right.
So yeah, that is, I think, what I kind of want people to get out of it, is this, you know, this idea that, or, you know, a lot of different sort of messages, but above all else, like, you know, the idea that the maid can be the hero of the story, that, you know, that it's no coincidence that the two main characters, arguably, you know, Emmerich and Vanya, are both commoners, and they can be, you know, the lead of the story too,
right?
The heroes.
Yeah. And they sometimes, you know, commoners are, they can be more, you know, they're more inspirational, and they can be more interesting in general anyway. You know, they're
exactly,
yeah, because they've had to try a little bit harder, they've had to be a little bit more clever, they've had to figure things out a little more, and
right,
you know, things weren't as easy for them, so that definitely can be, they've had to learn more. I think they come out a little bit stronger for it, for sure. And then last thing, okay, so what advice would you give to the four of them, the four main ones, I guess you could say, it's Vanya, Giselle, Emmerich, and Ragni. What advice would you give to each of them?
Oh, that's a really good question. Okay, so for Vanya, I think, you know, the advice is basically the book of, but it's, you know, be open, or, you know, I guess it would be, you know, it's not all going to be bad always. And you can live your life in cynicism, but recognize that cynicism is kind of its own prison.
right.
And for Emmerich, my advice would just be stop talking. that both is and isn't a joke, in that I think he, you know, he's a very smart kid. And, you know, one thing that we see is that he sort of struggles with being that, with being smart in a way that doesn't make people feel bad about themselves.
Right.
And, you know, that's a legit thing, but I think, he is sort of, he can be a little bit judgmental, as a result, and because he's just used to always being right. And,
right. Yeah.
I think he needs to be better. Like, I personally think I'm going to pass judgment on my own character here. I think he will grow more as a person if he lets other people show them who he is, or show him who they are, rather than deciding that ahead of time, as he learns several times throughout the book. For Giselle, I would go back to the advice that I'd say, you know, people would be hopefully taking from the book, which is that your growth cannot come at the expense of other people. You know, and that's something to be mindful of, for sure, because, you know, we have this whole thing where, you know, hasn't had an easy life. But comparatively, there are plenty of people who had it worse, and she didn't see, you know, the way that she stepped on them to help herself.
Right.
And
right.
for Ragna, I think, you know, she's like, she's smarter than people give her credit for. So my advice to her would also be stop talking. just because I think the way that she speaks tends to make people judge her very quickly. And sometimes that works in her benefit and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I think Ragni was probably my favorite. And, you know, in particular when she was trying to figure out, you know, they were going over some of their plans for a particular situation and where they, Ragni impersonating Vanya was very, very funny.
and
all the
that.
Other characters thought it was very, very funny as well. But no, I appreciated it because, and then she's observant and she's usually kind of spot on. So, you know,
exactly.
Like I love how you said where she's smarter than a lot of people might think initially. She's got to use that to her advantage for sure. But I think, but she's just so innocent where she doesn't even think of it like that.
Right. And I think, you know, the whole thing for Ragna that was like important for me was that she's kind of ferociously good in that, you know, she is not out there to screw Vanya over. She's not out there to not be out. Like she is genuinely curious about this world that, you know, she is experiencing for the first time coming from the forest to live in the human city. And like, you know, there's a lot that she doesn't know and she doesn't get and she doesn't understand, or she hasn't learned yet how to interact with that world. And she's sort of approaching it from a very innocent point of view, but also like it's more naivete than sort of willful ignorance.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's the one it was important to me to have her sort of be this foil to Vanya, who is, you know, just cynical and very much out to serve herself because nobody else will. And then along comes Ragna and Ragna's like, yeah, I'll help. What do you need? You know,
yeah.
you want to do something cool? Cool. So do I.
Yeah, right.
Let's go. You know, it's just like unflinchingly like, yeah, sure. Let's be friends. Cool. I'm friends. You want to be friends? We're friends. Done. And that's,
yeah,
you know,
it's like matter of fact, you know, just like, wait, exactly. What? Like, you know, why wouldn't I do this? Or why would, you know?
Right, exactly. She very much cuts to the chase of like, well, yeah, I'm just going to be a nice person about it. End of story. And
yeah,
and let's go. let's get on with our lives.
Like, stop complicating things, Vanya. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so it was enjoyable. It was cute. It was an interesting retelling or take on the Goose Girl. And you know, like people who definitely are, you know, into the genre and also who are familiar with, you know, Germanic or Bavarian life back in the day, they'll definitely get that little extra something out of it for sure. So Little Thieves, October 19th. Margaret Owen, thank you so much. This is I always love having these conversations and, you know, welcome back for a second round. We'll keep an eye out for anything else that, you know, you've got planned. I don't know if you have any future projects coming up that you want to talk about or not.
So sometime in the future is going to be the anthology that I'm curating with Hannah Alkoff, which is the Grimoire of Grave Fates, which is a sort of narrative, an anthology in a shared world with that's following a single narrative where it is a story about a magic school where a much loathed professor has just been found murdered. And every chapter is told from the POV of a different student who is either connected to the murder somehow or trying to solve it.
Okay.
And it is a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun to edit, and that will be out. We're still nailing down the final dates on that, but
yeah.
Yes.
So it's almost like, is that like your first murder mystery-esque, you know, thing?
Yeah. I think this is like my first official, like, okay, whodunit kind of thing.
Yeah.
And each different chapter is written by a different author. They each have a different sort of clue or element that sort of ties back to the murder somehow. You know, the challenge is to follow them all through and make
me
have the whole thing connect. And it is 18 different characters.
Okay.
And it is a very ambitious project, but it's a really, really cool one because
that sounds really cool. Is that going to be young adult or
it is?
Okay.
It's going to be, okay. Yeah. And the idea was, when we reached out to different people to contribute, we wanted to make sure to reach out to folks from identities that, have not necessarily been welcomed in certain famous magical school worlds.
Okay.
And okay. One of the, you know, it's a really special anthology, in a lot of ways, because they're all just absolutely phenomenally talented authors, and I could ramble about the unparalleled genius that's on every page. Also really cool to be part of this project and making this world where it, you know, it says you too can be part of a magical school system.
Okay. Oh, that's so cool. We'll have to keep our eye out for that. That sounds very unique and, you know, kind of original in the sense of, you know, the collaborative, you know, aspect of it and having to try to have it all tied together somehow, which even though I'm sure there's like, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, but it sounds like definitely a challenge, but very fun one. Okay. Thank you so much, Margaret. We'll keep an eye out for you. And yeah, for sure. Little Thieves, October 19th. Thank you so much. And we'll keep an eye out.
And thanks for listening to this Cantina conversation between Megan and Margaret. We appreciate you listening to yet another great conversation with an author. We hope that you support the authors. If you found interest in this book, go ahead and pick it up. You can find Margaret's social media handles as well as links to purchase the book over at our show notes at thenerdcantina.com. Or you could just find us over at thenerdcantina.com/community to find our social media pages and join, engage, and let us know what you think. Until next time, we'll talk to you later, nerds.